If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
The following program is being brought to you on the Green Talk Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit thegreentalknetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability. Your hosts are Bill Reed and John Becker, co-authors of the Integrative Design Guide to Green Building. This program will help you take sustainability to the next level. Here are your hosts, Bill Reed and John Becker.
Good morning, everybody, or afternoon, wherever you may be. This is Bill Reed speaking.
And John Becker speaking.
And welcome to our show. We are... have a deeper purpose to our show than many sustainability, not all for sure, shows out there. John, you want to talk about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, welcome to Building Deeper Green. And we have a purpose, really, that's going to cross all 13 episodes, this being our first. And very simply, we're trying to create a forum for exploring the bridge that exists between green building practices and sustaining life. And this is largely built around what we call Wilson's Law. Let me read you a quick quote from E.O. Wilson. If you save the living environment, it automatically will save the physical environment. If you just save the physical environment, as we've come to understand it, we'll lose both.
And so much of the work in the green building movement has been around the technologies that we've created as a society. And that's understandable because it's technologies to some degree, and maybe a large degree, that have put us in the problem of abusing the planet in the first place. However, the idea of sustainability has been watered down over the years. We've had a tendency to banalize the term to the point where sustainability now means somebody can say, I'm building a dam project to give jobs to my country, therefore it's a sustainable project. We had one client say to us, a private school, they said, well, we're already doing sustainability. Said, okay, how's that? Well, we have an endowment. And, yeah, what else? Well, we have an endowment. That means we are sustainable. So the word sustainable is used in a lot of contexts, but I think we know deep down that what we're really trying to do is sustain life on this planet.
So our purpose over these 13 episodes is really to create an arc that enters the whole system of life through green buildings. Bill and I are both architects. So our first program today is entitled, What Are Green Buildings? And our purpose pretty much today is to demonstrate the trajectory of what we mean by green buildings. And Bill started there a little bit by opening up a quick discussion of definitions. One of the things...
Oh, I want to just interrupt.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
So there's a really great quote that Michael Pollan used in an article in New York Times Magazine from Confucius. And he says this, Confucius advised that if we hoped to repair what was wrong in the world, we had best start with the rectification of the names. The corruption of society begins with the failure to call things by their proper names, and its renovation begins with the reattachment of words to real things and precise concepts. And he goes on to ask, so what about that word sustainability?
Well, notwithstanding that Confucius was a bit of a fascist, according to our other partner here, but of course... what we want to do then is utilize what is behind that quote and be very careful about our definition. So, why don't we start by defining sustainability? We just got finished writing a book called The Integrative Design Guide to Green Building, and in that, we borrowed as a way to introduce this, a quote from Jonathan Porritt, who very simply says that if it's sustainable, you can do it indefinitely. If it's not, you can't. But
so, where, what do we
have? Where do we go with that?
So what do we have? And we have a LEED Platinum building. And while many people think that that means that we've achieved the highest pinnacle of green, those of us who have worked in LEED for years know that the purpose, the real purpose of LEED is to transform the marketplace, not necessarily to define what green building is. And while it's an incredibly important objective to reach towards this limiting the damage approach that a LEED Platinum building offers us, we end up with, if you follow Jonathan Porritt's definition, the question is, can we replicate a LEED Platinum building 100,000 or 1 million times?
Or are we just at that point doing less damage?
Yeah, and how much less damage?
Yeah, and so what we really want to try and get at here is, okay, that's an entry point into this trajectory of green building. So a good way we thought we might want to start this discussion is, okay, what is the history of the green building movement really quickly, so that those of you who are not so familiar with it could get a quick little overview. So Bill, where would you say this started?
Yeah, well, I think most people suggest that the environmental movement, the real environmental movement, started with Rachel Carson and Aldo Leopold, and the recognition that we're destroying living systems through an overabundance of toxicants in the environment, or misuse and misunderstanding, occupying the land rather than inhabiting the land, or even further, rather than letting the land inhabit us.
Right, and then there was the solar energy movement that really emerged in the 70s.
From the energy crisis. But, of course, people were thinking, far-seeing architects were doing solar design, passive solar design, even in the 30s and 40s.
Well, the reality of it is, if we go all the way back to the Romans and the Greeks, they were about as sustainable as it gets. And we'll get into this in much more detail in later episodes.
So they were sustainable. Why? I don't know if they were sustainable or not. They didn't have as much impact because there was less population, and they weren't using an abundance of technology that can chew up the land faster than we can think about its ramifications. But they were using the sun. They were living with bioclimatic forces. Their buildings and their communities were forced by the very lack of heavy-duty technology to respond to the natural conditions around them.
And so we can still learn quite a bit from that. So it was actually centuries and centuries that we operated under those kinds of conditions until we emerged in the Middle Ages. Now we're really going back to the history of this, with the master builder approach, whereby there was one mind who was able to know all of the local technologies, tasks, the workforce,
local materials, the
microclimates, everything. But then we entered into the age of specialization when?
Well, the industrial era began.
Yeah, the second industrial revolution, at which point we were able to gain and gather materials from long distances and communicate across long distances. Hence, it no longer became based on place.
Did you say second industrial revolution?
The second industrial revolution, yeah, because the first one, I'm really talking about when we started to be dependent upon burning fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, so that then takes us pretty much, I mean, we can fast forward from the dawn of the Industrial Revolution to the emergence of green buildings in about, I'd say, the early 70s. Would you say that's about when we started seeing this emerge as a movement, at least?
Well, it's the response to the oil crisis, to very high energy prices. We had Jimmy Carter talking about the need to have a war, the equivalent of a war in this issue, and, of course, that didn't fly. It's not very motivating to talk about a war to heal the planet, so I think that, from my perspective, we were given a fair amount of support by the federal government through the Department of Energy and the tax credits for solar energy, and that spawned an awful lot of businesses in the solar world.
And, until 1982.
Right, until the Reagan era, where they ripped the solar panels off the White House and closed down DOE. And in a way, that can be seen as a... I wish it had been made across the board. Pulling the tax incentives from the solar industry should have been applied to nuclear and oil as well. But that caused a lot of businesses that were dependent upon the federal largesse to go out of business.
And so then there was almost kind of a decade of retreat that began to reemerge again in the mid-90s, and the real birth of it in the U.S. was, rebirth, I should say, was probably the formation of the U.S. Green Building Council, which created the LEED Green Building Rating System, which really is identifying impacts buildings have across sites, water, energy, materials, indoor environmental quality. It's just a green building rating system. Bill, in fact, was instrumental in initially authoring much of what's in LEED. So now where we are is taking a look at, okay, now that we've got a couple hundred LEED platinum buildings, and all that really means is there's four different levels of LEED certification you can achieve, from certified to silver to gold to platinum. Where do we go? And one of the ways that might help you folks understand where Bill and I are coming at it from is how did Bill and I start to become engaged with this? What is it that makes us want to do this? So, Bill, how did that happen for you?
Well, my first experience was seeing a passive solar house in Vermont, and it was a revelation. I don't know why it was a revelation, because the sun has always existed and windows have always existed, but knowing that you could actually capture that heat, that the window actually served more than one function, was the beginning of an awareness that actually we can have things do more than one thing. And to have free energy given to us seemed like such a gift that was the beginning for me of looking beyond the objects into how we actually work with the flows of life and energies.
Well, and for me, it was actually working on my first green project back in, 1995. I didn't know it was going to be a green project until the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, this was for their DEP, brought some money to the table to teach us. I was the design architect, teach our team what it meant by green. So they held an all-day session, and that's not really the story. That was on a Friday afternoon. The story, though, is the very next morning. On Saturday morning, about 8 o'clock in the morning, I got a call from the fellow who was bringing the funding to the table, and for me, it was an epiphany. I was on the phone with him for 2 hours, and I'll never forget this. I hung up the phone and looked at my wife and said, you know, my life just changed. And she, of course, said, well, what does that mean? I said, well, you know, I've now been designing buildings for 15 years. I went to high-end design schools. So it was all about the aesthetics for me, and I realized in that 24-hour period that I've been making some big mistakes about how these buildings are impacting the environment, and I just looked at her and said, you know what, I make a promise right now, I will never do that again. Henceforth, I will take these environmental issues into prime consideration instead of aesthetics on every project I work on. And that's exactly what ended up happening. It changed my life.
Yep.
Okay.
We're almost to a break point. I want to also ask to whoever is out there, we want to know who you are. We have a lot of issues planned over the next to address in the 13 episodes. We would love to get your emails. You're welcome to go to our websites. We'll talk about that later. But if you care to send an email, send one to our assistant, Shannon Murphy, shannon@regenesisgroup.com. That's shannon@regenesisgroup.com.
And please tell us if you have anything in particular you'd like us to address, and we'll try and do that. So it's time for us to take a short break. This is John Becker and
Bill Reed, and we'll be coming back and we'll be getting into the trajectory of environmental design. Where are we going?
Thinking green? Want to become a host expert on the Green Talk Network? Contact Jeff Spinard, president of our internet radio division, at 480-294-6417. That's 480-294-6417. Or click on How to Become a Host on our homepage. You're listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
Hey, y'all. This is Stephen Cochran. As a country artist, I have traveled around this great country of ours, often meeting our brave men and women in uniform. And as a Marine and veteran of both the Iraq and Afghan conflict, I know how important it is to thank our troops who defend our freedom each and every day. One of the best ways to thank them is to give their children and spouses the gift of education. Scholarships for 2 years, 4 years, and vocational school. This is exactly what a national charity, Thanks USA, does. Please go to their website, www.thanksusa.org, to make a generous donation to the Thanks USA Scholarship Fund for the families of the troops, and I thank you.
If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Attention shoppers, if anyone is missing a rather plump set of love handles, please come to the customer service counter and claim them. The ample love handles were lost in the produce department where their former owner had purchased fruits and veggies to munch on during the big game. Thank you and have a good day.
Small step number 81, snack on fruits and veggies. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, everyone. We talked a little bit about the background, but about green buildings, and enough of that. Let's start to get right into what we mean when we say the trajectory of green buildings.
So we like to think in this about this in terms of levels, and I'm sure most of us have heard out there that green building is just a slower way to die, to put it bluntly. Or limiting the damage.
Doing less damage, right?
Right. Is,
and what's the story Bill McDonough tells?
Driving
80 miles an hour west when you want to go east.
I'll tell you. So if you're in a car in Kansas and driving towards Canada, but you really want to go to Mexico, if you slow down the car, will you get to Mexico any faster? So are we slowing down the car? I think the answer is yes, we're beginning to slow down the car. But are we making the turn? And this show is about what kind of turn, the nature of the turn that we have to be making. And you do have to slow down the car to make the turn. And by the way, I do want to say that we are emphasizing, you'll hear this in a little bit, the living system side of sustainability. But it is absolutely essential to do LEED and more to get us there. We cannot ignore the limiting the damage aspect. So if you hear us denigrating that a little bit, please don't take that and say, well, it's either or.
Well, in fact, what you had said earlier, in fact, LEED is about transforming the marketplace. And to transform the marketplace, you have to do it incrementally, yes?
Mm-hmm.
So really what's happening here is LEED is slowing the car down to be slow enough to turn around and head to Kansas.
And there are other systems, too. There's BREEAM, and there's Green Star.
And there's ISBE Green Building Challenge.
CASB
in Japan. And there's probably a dozen robust systems out there around the world.
So all of them are generally working on a technical approach to sustainability. So the first level of sustainability, actually the first level is where we are, and I love what Randy Croxton says. He says, we build our buildings just one step better than breaking the law. And, any less, we'd be thrown in jail if they had the propensity to do that to us.
And we do that with basically technologies. We buy green stuff, right? Green products.
Well, that's the next level. That's the efficiency level. So LEED is actually asking us to do better than limiting the damage, better than code. And so we go 30% energy savings, 20% water reduction use, reduce toxicants on our building materials, and so on. And the point of that is that we have to start limiting the damage that we're going to the Earth. But the question is, do we achieve a condition of sustainability if we achieve 100% less bad? Can we achieve 100% less bad is the question. And as Herman Daly says, perfection is impossible.
Well, in some ways, then, that means that the condition of sustainability is nothing more than a neutral position.
If you can even get there. Which you can't. The minute you build a building, you're occupying land. You're destroying something.
So we need to rethink that.
I'll say more.
Well, because what we've been targeting as our goal is to be sustainable. But I think what we're trying to get at in this show, and hopefully we'll get there in these 13 episodes, is that, in fact, we can use our development process as a means to participate in and improve the health of the places we inhabit.
Okay, so let's get back to the trajectory then,
yep.
That cue. So we have, let's go back, we have, we're just one step better than breaking the law. We're now more efficient. We're using LEED and other rating systems to help us improve our approach to technologies that are damaging the planet. Sustainability is, if you will, a conservation approach. Now, conservation biology
consuming
is...
Consuming less.
Well, or damaging, not impacting.
Consuming less, damaging less.
Now, let's take that to an extreme. The conservation approach basically says that you keep nature here and we'll work out beyond this. The National Park System, for instance, is an indicator of, in a way, the weakness of this approach. Because what we say is, nature, you stay in a park, and we put a fence around it, and we pat it on the head, and we say, you behave, and we're going to go out here and screw it up.
Kind of like a zoo for trees.
A tree zoo, right.
Yeah. But we'll get into that in great detail in one or two of the episodes that focus specifically on that issue. We're just trying to introduce some concepts
right,
here today.
Right. And the next, but so that puts us into the living system side. So we're working on sustainability from a technical world. We need to be working on how we as humans interact and heal the ecosystem, not just stop, not just being neutral, which you can't, but actually engaging in nature in a different way, healing and regenerating.
Okay. So why is this hard? It is hard.
Yeah, why aren't we doing it?
Yeah, why aren't we doing it? Because otherwise, if it were easy, we'd all be doing it, right?
So we like to ask in seminars that we give, what's the hardest thing for humans to do? And 99% of the people shout back, change.
Yeah, you know the old joke about how many architects does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know that one.
Well, it could be as many as you like, but actually one to actually change the light bulb and the other dozen or so to talk about it, right? But how many engineers does it take to change the light bulb?
I don't know.
What, change? Right, so this is not a dig against engineers at all. It's more, I think, where we are as a culture. We really are, in fact, perhaps even the organism is wired, hardwired against systemic or quick change. So that what we're really talking about here is change. So how do you change? Well, that's really what we're going to be talking about in every episode.
Dana Meadows has a famous piece, and I recommend reading it on the web because it actually will set us up for the episode, next week's episode. It's called Places to Intervene in a System, and you can Google that, and you'll get right to it. But she describes a number of different feedback mechanisms, but the most important feedback mechanism is changing the paradigm from which we're working. Which is basically a mental model shift. And it's very difficult to make that mental model shift. So the green design movement, if you will, is about actually leading us towards a fundamental mental model shift. And where we're going is that this fundamental mental model shift doesn't include just technology. It does include technologies. It also has to include a shift in how we perceive and live with the nature, the natural systems that support us.
Well, in fact, there's a pretty clear structure that we can organize our discussion around. The sort of typical entry point is the green products and technologies that we're all fairly familiar with, you know, compact fluorescent light bulbs, energy recovery, recycled content and materials. That's buying green stuff. Well, that's all really important to do, but that won't get us there. It's insufficient. The next is process. How do we actually go through a process to synthesize how each of these systems work with each other? And between those two is the tools that we use to engage that process. So those are sort of the first three, and then build a real I'd say, pinnacle of how to do this is that mental model shift, which is really where we're going to be focusing our discussion.
Now, many clients, we're both architects and we work with clients, people love to focus on the stuff. We're a very object-oriented society. In fact, our whole language is object-oriented. It's subject and verb. The very fact that we say it is raining indicates that we always need to have a subject in there somewhere, although the concept of it is kind of ludicrous when we're talking about the earth is raining. So when we talk about buildings, we want to talk about PV panels and water-saving toilets and light bulbs, like John said. Now,
photocell sensors and dimming ballasts with daylighting strategies and materials that are manufactured within a short distance of our site, et cetera, et cetera. These are products.
And that is, unfortunately, that mental model is what makes green buildings cost more.
Yeah, and that's really the perception out there that green buildings cost more. So our question is, do they really? And we're going to sort of constantly allow that to be a thread that runs through this. And in fact, in the workshops Bill and I facilitate, we always ask that question, hey, do green buildings cost more? And generally, slightly more than half say yes. I will say this, though. 3 years ago, 90% said yes. So the shift is already occurring. So how do we do that? Well, besides the products, the next step is tools. And we've got some really robust tools out there that help us analyze how the decisions we're making about the building designs we're creating and building, in fact, are performing. And probably the most robust among them is energy modeling. So not sure if you folks are that familiar with what energy modeling is, but in a nutshell, you're building a three-dimensional model of the building in a sophisticated piece of computer software and inputting the configuration of the building and its equipment and its orientation and its insulation values and local utility tariffs. And essentially, you can model what the building's energy performance will be.
And we do the same thing with water. We do the same thing with daylighting. We can do the same thing with habitat, not as easily, but that's a different subject, and we'll get into that later on. And we do the same thing with materials, the material life cycle. So the point is that we need to take the time in the design process to ask the right questions and determine the answers before we assume that the answer is adding PV panels to a building.
Yeah, the sort of we'll have a whole show on this, but the sort of adage about energy is reduce loads, and then size your equipment accordingly. So that's essentially the state of green buildings in general at present. Technologies and products and modeling tools that help us make decisions about those technologies and products.
And that basically, with that approach, we end up with more efficient buildings and more efficient technologies. If we take, and actually we can end up with lower cost buildings as a result with higher performance. But we haven't gotten to sustainability yet.
And generally speaking, the perception is that costs more because materials cost more and the process costs more. So we're going to take a short break here. And you're listening to John Becker and Bill Reed on Building Deeper Green. Stay tuned.
This is the Green Talk Network, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all. If you're thinking of starting a business or are already in business, tune in as the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur addresses business ownership concerns. Business novice or not, let the Kitchen Table Entrepreneur help you each week as we present and discuss the meat and potato issues of starting and running a business. Join the discussion. There's always room for your thoughts and opinions. The Kitchen Table Entrepreneur is a valuable program you should be tuning into every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Network.
Hi, I'm Wendy Bellissimo with Nesting.com, proud sponsor of March of Dimes' premier walking event, March for Babies, formerly known as Walk America. You know, more babies begin healthy lives because of March of Dimes research and programs. And with our support, we can do even more for families all over America. One day, all babies will be born healthy, but we have to walk to get there. Join the March for Babies. Sign up at marchforbabies.org.
Where can you discuss environmental, ethical, and economic issues with the leading thinkers on these topics? Join host Shane Snipes for One Greener Radio. This program will spotlight key areas such as social impact and environmental ideas, as well as social entrepreneurship. Come on board for lively and engaging discussions with Shane and his experts. One Greener Radio promises to keep you thinking and brainstorming for more. One Greener Radio is broadcast live every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Green Talk Network.
The Green Talk Network is here. Spread the green.
You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Howdy, y'all. Bill and John again. So, we've talked about technologies, necessary but insufficient
products.
Talked about products, and then we've talked about the tools that are necessary to analyze those products to make sure we're picking the right ones. Now that is easy to say, but typically we talked again before about how hard change is. The design process that we typically go through in building design is very conventionalized. It's how we're able to apply fees for building designs and construction before the building is actually built. So we are very used to a process of delivery, building delivery. Now we're adding on to that process of building delivery new concepts, green technologies, green processes, and
modeling.
Right. Yep. All those tools, techniques that we use. And yet it's very hard to change. So
that's still all about the what.
So, yeah, and in fact, that's a good point. LEED and BREEAM and these rating systems really tell us what we are measuring, but they neglect to tell us how to do it. So the process of how to do it is essential if we are going to change. And that, I'm sure most of you heard that classic definition of insanity, the Greek definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again the same way and expecting a different result.
So we end up by selecting these products and processes with absolutely buildings that do less damage. There's no question about that. But are we still approaching sustainability, or on the trajectory that really is the arc of this entire show, are we getting towards a regenerative condition, which is really where we want to be in contributing to the health of the place? So what we have found over working with this for many years now is that the next step in this thinking is to approach, okay, how do we do it? What's the process?
How do we change?
And in the design process, we spent the last couple of years writing this book that we mentioned, and it really is an articulation of the process, and it's called integrative design. Now, for years, people referred to it as integrated design, but Bill, why did we stop calling it integrated?
Well, integrated applies, well, for one, it's bad English.
Right. Well, it assumes that you're done.
Yeah, it implies a process. It implies an object that you've completed, but we're at the beginning of the design process, so the process has to be one of continual integration or an integrative process. In fact, it's kind of elegant. Integrative medicine uses the same term because you're never done in healing yourself.
Well, the other thing that's really nice about it is it connotes that you're never done, right? Integrative, even when you're done with this particular project, it continues to live, as do you and other organisms, right?
Yeah. So the question is, have we created, even with an integrative building, have we created a sustainable condition?
And where do we stop integrating?
Right. The fundamental question is, where do we stop? Where do we draw the boundaries? And we'll be getting, again, that's for next week's program, about how we work with systems and complex systems. The nature of today, though, is introducing the concept of what it means to function in an integrative design process.
Yeah, and one of the ways that I think helps to introduce that concept is really thinking about our buildings and sites as organisms, which is a very different approach than a conventional approach that looks at this in a very linear way. In other words,
Pieces added together
and actually optimized in isolation by each of the engineers or architects or professionals involved with designing their piece of the entire system.
Right. The very idea of actually pricing a mechanical system separate from a whole building indicates that we think of these subsystems as whole into themselves, but that neglects the point about what's the role of the building facade in terms of its impact on energy. What's the role of building orientation on its impact on energy? And the typical design process, conventional design process used today, has the architect going through design machinations, five or six, seven different designs during schematic design. Even the programming has been set independently with the architect and the client.
And then testing to see if it works.
Just from a from a spatial standpoint.
Not to mention the energy and air quality and water issues.
Well, the engineer is invited in at the end of that design iteration process, and then the engineer is told, we'll make it work.
Which is interesting, because it's kind of the same thing. What happens then is these approaches get superimposed on top of, in essence, an already completed design.
Right, and so all the engineer can do, and we worked on a project where we were invited in during design development, and they had a west facade with 10 stories of glass, probably 200 feet long, 200 feet in width, and the engineer was instructed to add, I don't know, let's say 120 tons of air conditioning to make that building quote-unquote work.
Heat gain, yeah.
Sure. So when energy was cheap, we could do that. When we weren't thinking about ramifications of carbon in the atmosphere, we could do that. We now know better, or most of us think. Typically, we think we know better.
Well, so what we end up doing is designing the building first, and then figuring out what products and systems to buy in order to reduce its impacts. Well, this is kind of turning that around, and a good way to think about it, I think, in terms of understanding a building as an organism, is think of your body, which is comprised of, I mean, it's an organism. Comprised of a whole collection of systems, an immune system and a respiratory system, a circulatory system, all of which work in elegant concert with each other. There's no redundancy and there's no waste.
Right. And what does it take to keep a body alive? It takes food, water, sunlight, healthy soil.
And air.
Air. Yeah. So sustainability can...
just finish that analog quickly.
Well, sustainability can simply be seen as... talking about a definition, sustainability is making sure that the universal elements that the alchemists figured out years ago are actually the active ones we need to be thinking of. The sun, which we can't do a whole lot about, earth, wind, fire, and water. So the health of the soil, the health of the air, the cleanliness of the air, and the cleanliness of the water conspire, collaborate together to produce food for us and food for all species.
Yeah, and those are really the four key subsystems, which we'll come back to. In fact, we're going to devote a show to each one of those four key subsystems: habitat, water, energy, and materials. But the analog to the body can simply be concluded by saying perhaps we can think of our buildings in the same way. Perhaps the ventilation system in the building is its respiratory system, and the electrical system is a circulatory system, all of which have tremendous impacts on each other. I mean, for example, when you catch a cold and your respiratory system is jeopardized or compromised, does that have an impact on your immune system and on your...
Well, and other bodies that you might see.
Circulatory system and the other organisms around you, right?
Right.
So this is really how we need to be thinking about our buildings, but the problem is we don't.
And we don't take the time to.
And each of us, in fact, I was, and in fact most of the folks who are my contemporaries tell me they were trained and conditioned to operate in a world whereby each of us is paid specifically to focus solely on components within our discipline. So the mechanical engineer will design the cooling and heating system, and the electrical engineer will design the lighting system, as an example, but those two are inextricably tied together. Why?
Well, the level of integration in our buildings, they're tied to, well, the answer to that question, why? Because the heat from the lights, for instance, can overheat the space significantly. If you've ever been a retail store, you know how much heat comes from those incandescent lights.
Yeah, just as an order of magnitude, for every 3 watts you spend lighting a light in a building, you're typically going to spend another watt of energy cooling the heat generated by that light.
So not only are lights impacting the cooling, the amount of daylighting coming into the building is impacting cooling, the amount of bodies in the building, the amount of natural ventilation, et cetera. So there are a number of systems that we need to consider as a whole. And it goes beyond that, to take the analogy of the body further. The building is a body, and it requires inputs, air,
water,
fuel, people, inputs, food, inputs.
Nutrients. And it also has flows out of the building, just like all organisms do.
So there's no boundary around the building. And so there's no longer a boundary that we can consider as out of our domain of responsibility.
So let's try to give one very quick, clear example of how systems impact each other in a building, right? There's a bunch of them we could give. One that I think is probably pretty clear is, for those of you who live in colder climates, we commonly install perimeter heating systems at the windows, right? Well, and the reason for that, of course, is that that's the most vulnerable place in the building envelope. So what we have found repeatedly is by specifying high-performance windows, such as triple-glazed, low-E-coated, argon-filled, with thermally broken frames, we can eliminate those perimeter heating systems, and the additional cost of those windows, which, of course, is more than conventional windows, that added cost is actually less than the cost it would have taken to install the perimeter heating system. So in essence, by installing one system of more expensive windows, you can eliminate another system of perimeter heating and thereby achieve a first cost savings, while at the same time an energy savings over the life of the building because one whole system is gone. But furthermore, you've now also mitigated the most vulnerable place in the thermal envelope, so that the architect specifies better windows, the mechanical engineer can now utilize less heat gain and heat loss in that building to downsize the central heating and cooling system, which produces not only an additional first cost savings, but an additional operational savings over the life of the building because it's a smaller system.
And you can take that further. Even just the orientation of a building can reduce energy significantly. A typical house in the Washington, D.C. area, if you do an energy model for that, it's a typical colonial house, let's say, and face it east, do an energy model and turn the house south, that move alone, no window changes, no mechanical system changes, no insulation changes, will save 30% of the energy just because of the proper orientation.
Yeah, and now if you add better daylighting with photocell sensors and dimming ballast, then you can, in fact, reduce the heating load, well, the heating inside the space that affects the cooling load, because you can now have the lights on less, which creates a double energy saving. So in other words, the point being made here is that integrative design really is a means by which the team functions as an organism, with every one of the engineers not isolating their focus on just the components in their discipline, but really looking at the whole.
Well, let's go wholer here, because if you have a home, as we did in Washington, D.C., covered with trees, you no longer have the sun on the house. So those trees are an integral part of the air conditioning system. And so one of the things that starts leading us outside the boundary of the building. And to start this to end this segment with where we started, the integrative design, the definition for integrative design.
Let's define it as clearly as we can. So,
all right. So one, the definition that we use is integrative design seeks to unify technical and living systems to an increasingly life-enhancing whole.
Ah, nicely said. Well, okay, it's time for us to take a short break, and you're listening to Building Deeper Green with Bill Reed and John Becker on the Voice America Green Talk Network.
Talk Network is here. Spread the green.
Do you know what it takes to reach massive success? Do you know that if you change your thinking,
you can change your life?
The Development Connection with host Amy Himes will give you the keys to reach ultimate success. Each show will feature topics to help you reach personal, career, and business ownership success. And you'll learn how to enlarge your vision to move ahead in life and within your organization. The Development Connection with Amy Himes is live every Monday on Voice America at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. Listen today and move forward tomorrow.
Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Esau provides homeowners and investors eager to invest well in real estate the knowledge, resources, and tools necessary to generate significant wealth. Our focus will be the paradigm. Live where you want. Invest where it makes the most sense. Listen live to the brightest minds in real estate investment every Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. That's Income Property Investment Talk with Peter Mosca and Dean Esau, where America learns to invest.
Eco-conscious trends and lifestyles. You are listening to the Green Talk Network. Spread the green. You are listening to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. If you have a question or comment about today's show, please send an email to Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. That's Shannon at RegenesisGroup.com. Now, back to our program.
Okay, now that we're back, we can simply recap where we've been. And we've talked about this idea of the importance of green products and technologies, yet the insufficiency of that approach alone. Then the tools that we can use to see how those products and technologies will in fact perform, such as energy modeling, but that even that is insufficient unless we understand how each of those components interact with each other systemically as a whole. In other words, are there mutually beneficial interrelationships and or synergies that can occur between them? Hence, the mandate for an integrative design process.
A change in process, a change in how we design our buildings, design our communities, in fact, design our businesses. So let's unpack the word integrate a minute. We found that pretty useful just to go to the dictionary. As Confucius said, we've corrupted a lot of words.
Back to definitions.
So I know we're a little pedantic here, but we'll keep going.
What the heck?
Integrate, the definition, this is from the American Heritage Dictionary of English Language. Integrate means to make into a whole by bringing all parts together, to unify. So the word whole, then, is kind of a mysterious word. People toss that around a lot. So what does the word whole mean? Containing all components. It's complete. Now, here's an interesting aspect. Not wounded, injured, or impaired, sound or unhurt, or having been restored and healed.
Healed.
So let's go to the word heal. Heal means to become whole, or we heard that before, and sound. So we have integrate means to become whole and heal. Now, it's interesting that if you look up the etymological roots of whole and heal, they're the same word, hail, in Anglo-Saxon world.
Actually, even Proto-Germanic, it goes back a little even further.
Okay. And then another aspect of this, if we're going to become whole, what do we have to do? And that's seeking synergy. The interaction, the word synergy is an interesting one, the interaction of two or more agents or forces so that their combined effect is greater than the sum of their individual effects. So John just gave an example about windows and air conditioning and daylighting. I added trees to that and shading and how they, in fact, make buildings, and the evidence is pretty profound. Once you start thinking about how these products synergize, you actually can begin to build buildings with less cost and higher performance, which sounds like an amazing thing, and people have such a hard time believing that, but the evidence is profound and many, many case studies demonstrating that.
Yeah, and we haven't really worked on a project for, I'd say, 10 years now, whereby we utilized an integrative process and the building actually didn't cost less than conventional construction with significant energy reductions, often well over 50%.
Now, that doesn't mean that all green buildings are going to be less expensive than conventional. But if you use LEED as a benchmark, which is becoming the dominant benchmark...
It's really become the definition of green building in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah.
that you can do LEED, gold, platinum buildings for less than conventional construction.
Absolutely possible.
And not only possible, it's been done. If we'd like to say if you're, I don't know if we like to say it, but if you're actually, if you don't, if you're stupid about it, yes, you can spend a heck of a lot more money. And that doesn't mean really that's too harsh. It's just if you're inexperienced, you kind of don't have the faith that you can actually exercise that. Now,
well, the problem though is that how do you get that experience? So what we're really trying to do here on this program is invite folks to understand that this kind of a process can produce not only green buildings, but if we really examine what is our purpose for integrating, then we can change the world. And I know that sounds hyperbolic, but that's really what these next 12 episodes are going to be about.
Well, what motivates you? What causes change?
And we just talked about change being the hardest thing. So
how do we get motivated to change?
That's right. You change when you get motivated to change.
Does saving energy motivate you?
Yeah. Does producing less wastewater motivate you?
Some people it might. Does me, actually.
Yeah, me too, actually.
But it's hard to get people who are not thinking about this very excited about that. What's interesting is that we find people change most quickly when they are invited to by people they love.
Well, and which really starts to get back to, I think, this notion of the whole that you mentioned. Because what is the whole? And I think, Bill, your definition was really good. And in short, it is to integrate means to make whole, and to heal means to make whole. So in essence, when we're integrating, we're healing or wholing. And that's really the mindset shift that keeps us progressing on this trajectory from green buildings to sustainability to regeneration.
So I'm going to read the definition again.
Good.
Integrative design seeks to unify technical and living systems into an increasingly life-enhancing whole system.
Life-enhancing. Say
so,
more.
So what do we value? Yeah. What really floats our boat in the morning? What do we get up to do?
Why are you building this building?
Well, there's a fundamental.
Why are you building this building? Well,
make money.
To house more employees to make more money, yeah? You need a bigger building.
Yep.
So why do you want to make more money?
So I can have quality of life.
Well, you probably have a mortgage and kids you want to send to college, so
that's improving their quality of life.
And so why do you want to do that?
Well, because I care for my family.
Oh, so what does that mean?
That means I'm really building this building to care for my family.
Because you love them.
Yeah.
Yeah, would you say that?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, now, the conversation Bill and I just had, we've had in numerous, believe it or not, green building design workshops. And although it sounds ostensibly hokey, I can assure you, in my experience, that the energy in the room changes entirely when it becomes internalized as a personal motivation, as opposed to, oh, we're going to save the owner
money,
because now it really becomes about seeing a much larger whole where we're motivated by things that are really meaningful to us.
So I had a client say to me, if you show me any green technology that saves money, we'll do it. Well, so we said, that's great. We'll take that challenge. And we demonstrated how installing waterless urinals in his office building would save him about a third of the cost compared to conventional urinals when you look at supply piping and flushometers and infrared sensor removal from that system. And he said, well, we're not going there. Now, he obviously had a personal problem and wasn't able to do
well with that issue.
With that issue,
yeah.
Right. And so money really wasn't the issue. But it's interesting, a year later, at another meeting for another building, he ushered me into the executive washroom and showed me the first waterless urinal they installed. It took him time to actually get his head around the issue of doing something different. Change is hard.
And the change that we're really espousing here or discussing and exploring is that what we're integrating really is all living systems. Because, in fact, if we revisit that definition that Bill has read twice now, what we're doing is we are, in fact, unifying into an increasingly life-enhancing whole system. So what we're really talking about is all of life.
And change is about, ultimately, requires us to be aware of and understand these issues. And if we only approach design from incremental technical improvements, while that's important, we're not being bold enough. We actually have to offer people new and higher objectives, purpose, concepts, in a way that motivates them, and in a way this stuff can become a whole lot fun and much more valuable.
Okay, so when we say all of life, how the heck do we deal with that, right? Well, it's easier than you think, wouldn't you say?
I think it's actually much easier than counting thousands of pieces.
Yeah, and in fact, that's really what we were going to spend this entire program discussing. So on our each of these episodes, we'll engage this in a hopefully progressive manner, and the next one will address...
How do we think in systems?
What are systems? So,
see you next week.
We certainly are happy that you joined us. And to do this, let's just close by saying, to do things differently, we need...
To do different things, we need to do things differently.
And to do things differently, we need to think differently.
And to think differently, we need to be different.
See you next time.
For tuning in this week to Building Deeper Green, Reframing Sustainability with Bill Reed and John Becker. Please join us again next Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Green Talk Network, and make it a great and greener weekend.